concept. You're going to be using a hammer, and you don't think you're using a hammer until you hit your thumb. Mm-hmm. That's the moment the hammer becomes an object. It becomes something else you realize. And up until that point, it's just an extension.
Yeah, it's pure procedural processing. There's nothing declarative about it.
Right. So, same thing. I'm following my GPS. If I receive any kind of information that makes me think, wait a minute, my GPS must be giving me incorrect information. Then at that point, it becomes a GPS unit, and I start, on some level, I'm thinking of it as, what does a GPS unit do? Why is it giving me incorrect information? Up until that point, it's just part of my stream of I'm not interacting with it as though it's a GPS unit or a technology at all.
It's that moment that a lot of people or organizations who present information are trying to prevent from happening. How many times have you gone to a website and not been able to tell what was a valid link and what was just an ad?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I click, oh, that was an ad. Okay, close the window and go back.
Well,
sometimes some websites do their best to conceal that from you.
Yes.
Facebook. Yeah, and it's not just websites. You're watching TV. You're at a movie. It's about the suspension of disbelief, where you're sort of immersed in the environment, and then something happens. You break it out. Oh wait. Oh, I'm watching a movie. I can feel my emotions being manipulated by this. Exactly. they're using techniques to manipulate your emotions. And you go to a movie. You find there's a little sniggly eye. What was going on? It's like, oh wait, this is just a movie. Forget it. You just totally lost my suspension.
Can I just thank you for bringing up every single one of those points, because that was exactly the stuff that was giving me a royal hairball as I even tried to write this piece. It's all just, you're taking information, using everything you have to reconstruct what's going on in the world around you, and at whatever level your body stops and the environment begins, it's just about processing, and
which is where marketing then comes in.
Yeah.
And the reason I really like having transhumanism, this is where I go with what I think transhumanism is, in the broadest sense possible, is because fundamentally there's no difference between, hacking your body, putting on some fancy eyeglasses and seeing the world differently, and just changing the environment so that you get more information. Like, the question that kind of started this for me was, what's the difference between having RFID tags on everything and having those fancy goggles that will let you see everything?
What's the difference?
At the data level, you're still getting
data
feedback about everything.
I think the lag is what makes the difference.
Okay.
There were studies, I think I referenced it at one point, where people using Photoshop, the less lag there was, the more creative they were. The more closely what they were trying to do matched what actually came out. And so if you have the ability to immediately interact with something based on what your goggles are telling you, instead of having to walk up and scan it with your phone and be like, oh, okay, cool, now we're going to do this.
I imagine that plays into the breakdown of you as well. If I click on something and it doesn't immediately do what I expect it to do when I click on it, that causes me to then again have that breakdown and go, okay, what's going on?
It's kind of the same thing with when they've been experimenting with putting electrodes in people's heads while they're awake and having them interact with, say, computers. They've got guys that can interact with mice and play video games that are quadriplegics from here down, and they've got chip plugged into their head.
Yeah.
Granted, they have to be attached to a room full of computers to do it at this point. But the thing that they're finding is when they stimulate pain in the brain for the tip of your finger, there is lag. To where when you're burning your finger, you're anticipating it, and there is no lag. There's like a half second difference. If they tell your brain directly that it's burning, that something's burning, you're not going to notice it immediately. To where if you're sticking your hand towards a fire and your brain is gearing towards burning yourself, then you'll get the instant reaction.
And that's why if you've ever hurt yourself on purpose, it hurts more just before you do it than the actual hurt.
Can I bring up with leg, bring this back to the visceral idea? Because one of the things that I got was listening to, it was a pretty good Radiolab thing about what it means to have emotional reactions. And one of the things they were talking about was this notion that comes from William James and early psychology of you're not just reacting to your environment. You see your environment, it goes straight to your head, but first it goes to your body, and your body has this visceral reaction, and then when you're processing what's going on, you're simultaneously processing what's happening and what's happening in your body. So one of the fun, this is why I brought up the body as context, because your context is the world around you, but your context is also the adrenaline rush, whatever it is that's happening in you.
All the stimulus.
And there's right. there's a feedback loop as well between
mm-hmm.
what your body is experiencing and what your brain is interpreting as the body experiencing something. Is your brain reading the adrenaline and then coming up with an emotional response? Or is your brain coming up with the emotional response then triggering the adrenaline in the body?
Both ways,
it does definitely
sure.
go both ways.
And then even at that point, it becomes then what's up a little bit higher than the brain. Like, you could even take it up to a level of consciousness. And even start arguing points like whether or not getting into the, you know, that nature of reality and whether or not it's here, or are we all creating it together? Are we creating it separately and then interacting with it? Are we just imagining that we're burning our finger in a candle, or are we actually burning something in it?
That's
candle?
A whole nother conversation.
I was just touching on it there for a second.
I like the idea of your body reacting first. A cockroach is running when you turn on the lights before it even knows why it's running. And so I think that is part of the visceral experience. And we had a conversation about being in the dentist and
yeah.
the feeling of anxiety because he had nicked something.
Yeah, he was... Should I tell the story?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I'm sitting in the dentist's chair, and this is with a dentist that I'm very comfortable with. And as he is injecting the Novocaine into my jaw, I suddenly felt very anxious. I could feel my body reacting very anxiously. And that's not a reaction that I get when I'm sitting in that chair. So I'm thinking to myself, why am I feeling anxious? And he notices. He asks, are you feeling all right? I says, yeah, I'm just feeling a little anxious. I don't know why. He says, I probably nicked one of your capillaries and I was putting in the Novocaine. Because when I don't know if it was Novocaine, but when this hits your bloodstream, it tends to excite your body. And so you're feeling a reaction that is consistent with extreme fear or extreme anticipation or some kind of adrenaline response, but it's because the needle nicked a capillary.
And the cocaine got
yeah.
in my blood.
The cocaine, whatever it was, got in my blood. And
but you had the pure experience of one without the other.
Exactly. And I was able to look at it, and I was able to go, hey, that's kind of cool. And then I just let my body calm down, and it was all good. But he saw what was going on, because he knew what to expect. He saw the reaction in me, and he knew that I don't usually have that reaction. So he was already coming up with the opinion of, oh, maybe I need this capillary. And it was only then I understood what was going on.
And it's funny how you're able to control your bodily reaction when you have context.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're, well, no, you're right.
When you have context, yeah, because like...
When you can explain it away, it's not so looming in the dark corners.
My other example of that kind of experience is the difference between stage fright and that anticipation of desperately wanting to get on that stage because it's a lot of fun. Physically speaking, it's the same physical sensation for me. It's how I interpret that sensation. I'm either dreading going on that stage and feeling all adrenaline, or I'm really looking forward to getting out on that stage and getting all that adrenaline. It's the same physical reaction. It's just a different interpretation of that reaction. It totally changes how I perceive it.
Which turns right back into what's actually helping us import the data into whatever we might be using to sort through it. Because the consciousness definitely comes down to a point where it's a lot about perception, how you see things, which is why I was trying for some reason to find meaning in what happened on campus last week, because I just felt the need for there to be something different than what everybody else was trying to make it into, I guess.
I love your discussion of these feelings generating these different bodily responses, and then the context totally determines how you interpret them. And there's this classic thing in psychology called the shaky bridge experiment or something, where it's about people's romantic responses, and researchers would ask people questions just if they're in a normal setting, and then after they walked over a shaky bridge, they would there'd be, you know, an attractive researcher standing on the other side of the bridge after they'd just walked over and had their gotten their heart rate up, and they would ask them questions that would indicate, you know, the degree of sort of romantic attraction to the person, and it shot up after they had gone off the shaky bridge and their heart rate was up. So certain, if you stimulate certain physical responses and then interact with people, they're more likely to associate the interaction with you with what they're feeling in their body, and they're more likely to feel romantically attracted if they have something in their body that's signaling some sort of...
It depends.
Yeah. And can I ask you then how that would affect your idea of... Sorry, just because you brought up the question, your idea of data processing. If there's a complex feedback loop...
I don't think that we really process data the way we do.
I don't want to say data, but I mean
model,
created senses.
In the chat, Jake says fight or flight, but so much of our world requires chill, which our bodies don't know how to do. So
that's amazing.
So much of what we're hardwired to do is fight or flight, but when we sit in front of a computer and we're looking at what's happening in Dubai, we're supposed to remain calm. I don't know if that's the point he's making, but we're coming up with different contexts in order to not feel the way that we think was, Jake, is that what you wanted? Go ahead.
Well, this goes back to something very interesting. I was once looking up some of this research by this neuroscientist Antonio Damasio, and there's this thing called the somatic marker effect. And so, for example, if somebody gets in a car accident at a specific corner, an intersection, they're going to have this long emotional time to react to the accident. And then, like, thereby they develop this, like, physiological somatic marker where it triggers the emotional response every time they come near that same corner.
Mm-hmm.
But where, like, when the people are watching television or you're on the internet and the browser is just going...
Mm-hmm.
We're flipping through so many things. There's not that lag time for that emotional response to develop. So you can have like these graphic scenes of like violence or sexuality or something just appear to you as images, and you still absorb those images, but there's no emotional response that gets built up afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So that you do become desensitized, like, you know, physiologically.
Yeah.
I wonder what determines that desensitization, if it's just repeated exposure, because I've noticed when I was younger, I would watch violent things and my response decreased as I would sort of interpret it differently. And now it's completely changed for me, and I can't handle input from whether it's fictional or not. I'm incapable of distinguishing between fiction and reality in stimuli. So I wonder how that can flow and how that can change. What determines our responses, because it's just a really interesting experience to have my sensitivity to those types of stimuli change.
Back to the notion of being a basketball player and having personal experience, does that change it? Are you drawing up context from...
It seems like memories that we have in our brain that we constructed, like in our dreams we can experience them like as reality or something. It's the same thing. It's like, so like you, the ability to empathize is there when you are like have like a experience that you can somehow relate to it. And so like once that experience is there, it's like you might be able to empathize with something in a little bit broader context within a certain bound.
It's what makes things either easy to learn because you have context and previous experience, or rote memorization first so that you're building that web and then you can add on to it.
As far as empathy is concerned, I've been actually having this discussion with a lot of people lately. As far as empathy is concerned, I think it's just as much as any of the other skills or senses that we may or may not have. And it depends on how much we use it, how
mm-hmm.
much we practice it, how much
yeah.
we dwell on it, how much we make it a part of our lives. Because there's a lot of people
yeah.
in the world that if you walk down the street and there's someone on the ground crying, they're just going to keep walking because they have to be at work in 10 minutes. Versus me, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to try and decide, okay, are they crying because they're homeless and they're hungry? Are they desperate? Are they depressed? Did they just break up with their boyfriend? Did their mom just die? You know, things like that. And so then it starts dragging me in to that bit of data, and then I want to explore it some more, and I want to find out what exactly...
Click the link.
Right. Right.
Does the pointer change shape when you look
over? Well, I think that you are very exceptional in that way, and also you don't have to be to work in 10 minutes.
granted, I understand. I was using it as a hypothetical situation.
I think
just to illustrate a point.
I agree with that. I think it's a lot about choice, isn't like I had the contrast of when I was younger, I chose to immerse myself in certain things, and now I make the choice not to, and that has significantly changed my response. And I think people can sort of opt in and out of certain interpretations.
Sure. Well, let's go back to like the example of things. I use reframing all the time to deal with anxiety. If I get, I had a panic attack once on an airplane. It had nothing to do with the airplane, but created an anchor such that every time I get on an airplane, I had anxiety. And so, you know, it's just a matter of creating, establishing new associations and establishing a new loop rather than going through the loop of oh my God, I'm on an airplane, what's gonna happen? Having, I'm on an airplane, it's gonna be cool.
Metaprogramming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's,
getting back on the horse.
But realizing that you have that choice, I think is a big key to a lot of the things that come up in this discussion. And giving people that choice and empowering people with the knowledge that they have choice in the things that they can
do. It's so cool, too, like with this new paradigm emerging of like, multiplicities of like information we can grasp from all these different directions. There's also this like this new awareness like through the sciences and stuff like that that like the brain is plastic. It isn't really this deterministic system that we're born with or it's like an innate quality. But there's like tremendous power and potential for change.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we can actually physically just think something, change the whole structure of our like million synapses or something, our whole embodied experience. It seems like extremely powerful too, you know, at this point.
It's so
time.
Cool.
it can be used to make or break anything. It took imagination to create everything that you see and then act with it all, and it takes passion to have a need to do it or a need to want it. It's got amazing power. It can even, like you were saying earlier, how it fills in the gaps of where you're focusing because of parallax. There are black spots that you don't technically ever see. Your mind just fills in there. It's very powerful, and if you don't use it, it will atrophy, and you will get to a point where you are used to not having it.
And then you go to Fox News for all
your
news.
You go to Fox News for all your news. I had to have an argument with this guy on military.com. He cited three different articles about where they found weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and they were all from Fox News. I gave him 3 points of why I didn't believe anything he just posted. A, it's from Fox News. B, they're from 6 years ago. And see, it was some other point. And it was totally not really credible because most everybody knows Fox News leans one specific direction. But if you were to go back and start doing more research, you know, go back to the Associated Press, go to the BBC, go to everywhere else, it's like when I'm doing my research on the first 5 books of the Bible, I've got like 6 different versions of it. So that I can get closer to the original meaning, not necessarily the words. I want the data, not the context that they're presenting it to me in.
Wouldn't that be somebody else's context?
Each one has
yes.
their agenda.
Right.
And you have to filter through the agendas and find which
yeah.
you get what the actual
start.
Meaning
how much,
is.
How much, when you're dealing with the designed world versus dealing with the natural world, are you in control of your own framing? Do you feel more or less confident when you're going into something that someone has designed? Because in some way it like brings
in
up
the,
an awareness of,
in,
hey, someone's trying to get me to interpret
yeah.
this a certain way.
In the natural
way.
World, you don't have data providers who are trying to enforce their agenda onto the information that you're bringing in.
But you can still
world,
do your own reframing.
Yeah.
I mean,
in the designed world, everything you read on the internet has an agenda, one way or the other. You just need to know that. You still have the option to reframe. You still have the option to be aware that my eyes may be deceiving me. Maybe that mountain peak over there is closer to this one, but I can't really tell because I don't have the depth.
Mm. But there's no one telling you.
And that goes all the way back to the concept of authority. And the very first time any human went to another human and said, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't know what I think about
it. Yeah.
Such as what I was asking you before we got started.
Yes.
The whole Einstein atom bomb.
Yeah. But that's another discussion.
It's interesting, too, because it also seems like there's, like, in terms of data processing, there's also, like, this, like, social political, like an economic, you know, thing established as well. Because like, I remember Chomsky saying, like, okay, you come back from a hard day's work, it's like, you go upstairs, it's like, about to pass out, you have a beer, you turn on the television, you get like a 10-minute narrative of something. You automatically, because of our need to create like this kind of like coherent sense of the world, we try to paste that together. And then it's like, you don't have this freedom to like go out and explore information, to explore sources. So I think like so much of the population is kind of constrained by that. That it's like they don't have like the time. Like for me, I feel like I live a pretty leisured life. Like I can go off and explore like a million different, you know, sources of information.
But that's also what you choose to spend your time on.
Yeah,
and there was
true.
The whole gin and the cognitive surplus talk where, what was the guy's name that did that? Anybody?
I don't know, but he's awesome.
Yes. So he was talking about how we have an interactive society now and we're building things, and honestly spending 14 hours playing World of Warcraft is probably better than spending 14 hours watching television. And the people who were at the television networks were saying, they were talking about Wikipedia and how much time has been invested in it, and they said, where do people find the time? He was like, because they're not watching TV. And so you're choosing to use your time in an interactive sense, whereas other people are using their time to be spoon-fed.
Well, I don't think that they know that there is something else, though.
They're being told that there isn't.
Right, exactly. And they're just accepting that blindly because they wouldn't lie to me through my own damn TV, to quote George Carlin. May he rest in peace.
What does it mean to trust your senses when what you're in is an interactive game?
Well, see, that again gets you into touch with whether or not you know that you have senses that are above and beyond things like touch, sound, sense, smell.
We're all smart enough to live an existence that's pretty meta. And so we
it's
all
becoming
are,
more big.
Yeah, we are all able to.
Yeah, I didn't mean that you were always all in an interactive game.
No,
I meant
the,
like
no,
literally.
But in a,
just
in,
like
in
we're
in
watching
a,
TV. And just
in a way, though, we are all kind of in an interactive game, unless we're paying attention to what's happening around us. If I'm going through a day where all I'm doing is responding and responding and responding and responding and never getting a chance to actually sit back and go, okay, what's really going on
NPC.
Here? Then that's what's that?
NPC.
Yeah, exactly. but oh, man, I went that train of thought. What was I going with this?
We're all living in an interactive game.
Yeah.
It's like in the online world when we're playing World of Warcraft or whatever, we're all being presented with stimulus and we're responding with the stimulus in a particular way. In our lives, we're being presented with stimulus and we're responding to that stimulus in a particular way. And there's a lot of, when you're not really paying attention to the context, when you're not really paying attention, you respond to both in a knee-jerk kind of reaction. And then, like Willow, when she wants to open the box, her finger twitches because her brain goes, oh, I need to open the box. Click. Oh, wait. No.
Yeah.
The simulation becomes just as real as the actual reality.
Yeah.
And I think why we're able to trust our senses in those is because our senses are what help us predict patterns. And so we have things that we can expect in the real world. If I take a step forward, I'm going to take a step forward. You know, if I go through that motion. In the same way, if I point my mouse in the up direction and hold, I'm going to walk in that direction. And so our senses are in place to detect patterns. That's not the only reason they're there, but that's what they help us do. And so I think that's where the overlap is there, maybe.
We are pattern-seeking people.
Yes.
And that's how people notice to change, to alter patterns, to step out of cycles, to, again, it comes down to who's in control of the data. What you're going to do with it once you get it.
Be aware that we are constructing patterns. And be aware that like, the patterns are changing. And we can see the patterns in any ways we want to be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That allows for like a tremendous amount of freedom towards like, the way you interact with the world.
And so the patterns of advertising allow us to skip them.
Yeah, it's like, we're probably all at a level where it's like, we can see the advertising, we can see the manipulation so clearly that it's like,
mm-hmm.
That's why even when I tell people these days, I've been a promoter for a while, and there's nothing in the world like word of mouth advertising. There's no advertising on the planet, and studies have been done that come anywhere close to word of mouth advertising.
Except Libby's graphic design.
Because it's so non-personal. You just add, you click through,
yeah.
Like, working on stripping them all out, and Facebook and MySpace are just data miners.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to give you the ads that you want to see. You know, I mean, I appreciate the fact that they're giving me gay ads rather than all these straight women, but that's all that they're there for, is to collect the data and ship it off to people who are buying it, so that then they can train their ads and send you what they think that you want to see or what you. And it's really, really mean, because they're knowing things about me that I've never mentioned in words on them now.
Hmm.
Like, they're starting to, like, pull this off of other parts of my identity online. They're pulling this data out.
Or they're pulling out what you're actually clicking on and what you're not.
Among other things, yes. They have to have been doing that, because now they're offering me things on here that I've never, ever talked about on MySpace, and I'm getting ads for it from Google.
Yeah.
Never talked about it on MySpace. Never sent it over my Google Mail. None of that. The only time I've ever really talked about it was years and years and years ago on LiveJournal. No.
Well,
that's
kind
why it's kind of scared me at that point, is because where did they get that data?
Where they got that data is statistics and all the thousands and hundreds of thousands of other people that are on the internet. They're looking at a behavioral pattern of a group, and they're seeing, okay, well, these people all do this. And you just happen to have enough similarities with these people that the advertisers are now saying, okay, well, if this dude here's got, then maybe he is.
That would be kosher if that's any way near. I mean, the thing that I'm talking about specifically was something rather unique. I couldn't tell you what it is just right now, but it struck me, because how could they possibly know that about me?
Mm.
Maybe
it's not
it
something
was
that
just
they
chance.
It could be, and you can't ever rule that out.
Just
really.
In a pattern, maybe.
Yeah, you really can't ever rule it.
We need to get out of here soon, because they're closing up. So does anyone have any closing remarks they want to throw out there?
Cutting and pasting without a computer is messy.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
That's what actually cutting it out, and then having a glass tabletop, and doing your outline, and then moving pieces of paper around on floor. It's the original touchscreen.
Yeah, and it was
That's
a quote
so
by Marshall McLuhan, but every technological extension is a biological imputation.
Like
interesting.
Huh. Who is that by?
Marshall McLuhan.
You guys just rephrased like all of his theories for about 15 minutes
earlier. I have a clue in the back of my mind. So.
Marshall McLuhan's like basic theory. It's basic media theory. It's like the first thing you learn when you're a telecommunications student. The medium is the message.
Yeah.
Or the medium is the
massage.
Hang on, how you like to pronounce it. And it's basically talking about the very root of marketing, especially through perceptive media like television, movies, and radio, and things like that. And how, depending on how you're experiencing a certain statement, sometimes it controls a reaction. Unfortunately, because I was a telecom student, even past the point of just average intelligent person desensitization. I can't go anywhere or watch anything without looking at I'm always complaining about camera angles.
Yeah, and we could never watch porn together, because you'd be like, and this angle means this, and this means this, and we'd be like, ooh, and in social theory we learned about this, and you'd be like, yeah, and then this, the lighting is doing this.
Dude, that's hot.
No, it's not.
It actually makes things really not fun to experience on some level. But you guys were talking a lot about Marshall McLuhan, and so if you're interested in media theory, he's the first person you want to look at.
They're kind of a theory. McLuhan and the postmodern relativist Derrida, like the kind of people are before electronic age. At that time, they were using vacuum tube radio. So they are two generations behind that since first century. They are old school. So if you are sticking to that kind of idea, you are holding a very old paradigm. This is a totally different age. So I wonder that kind of so-called academic exercise is a necessary thing to go through, but it's already gone thing. Something is new thing is coming. For me, I am trying to start the translation. I mean, I'm a futurist and ideal composer. In the Transhuman, I like to start the Transhuman Academy. So everything I do is invention and the creation and futuristic. For example, if you are an inventor of a movement, for example, you create a dance, but you don't dance. Someone else dance. So I'm sticking to that kind of separation of composing part and action part.
I don't, does this have to do with the conversation we're having right
yes.
now?
Yes. Because I'm trying to start a transhuman movement, not just to talk about, but transhuman movement in Seattle. Seattle is one of the most advanced cultural center of the globe right now. And I am going to start here as a transhuman academy and futuristic. It's not about talking, it's about creating transhuman culture itself. And I invested my lifetime here. And I am separating the composition part and the action part. I will provide the map. I will provide blueprint. I will provide the content. But I want some people who are going to join with logistics, functional leadership. I will provide the content leadership. But I will separate the content and the functional leadership.
Okay, let's talk about this after we wrap everything up, because I don't think it has to do with data perception.
Let's finish the discussion and then we can talk later.
Jake's final point is you have to make a decision about who you trust. If you don't trust anything, you won't make any progress.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we talked a lot about having a sense of skepticism about a lot of things and how we process everything. So, or what you trust, sorry, not who you trust. Brought up your closing point?
Yeah. Okay, cool.
All right, then I'm going to shut this down. Thank you all for coming. I'll post everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.